Thanks for listening to this podcast of The Exchange with Ed Stetzer. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes it possible. Thank you.
If you take a proper reading of the Bible, you say Jesus saying, welcome the least of these. Serve them. If they're persecuted Christians, welcome them as brothers and sisters. If they're not, be a Jesus presence to them. We bring refugees into church communities, and we see people who follow Allah that come to know Jesus.
Thanks for joining us on The Exchange with Ed Stetzer, where we discuss truth, thoughts, and theology. On today's show, Ed spoke with Stephen Bauman about Christian activism and the global refugee crisis. Stephen's the president of World Relief, a global aid and relief organization seeking to empower the church to serve the most vulnerable. He holds degrees from Johns Hopkins University, Wheaton College, and the University of Wisconsin. He's a poet, an ordained minister, and a CPA, and he's also the author of Possible, a blueprint for changing how we change the world. Before we hear from Ed and Stephen, let's learn from another global ministry leader, David Platt, about bringing the gospel to all nations.
A while ago, George Pentecost said, to the pastor belongs the privilege and the responsibility of the missionary problem. And basically what he was saying is that mission boards or mission agencies have their place, but it's the responsibility of every pastor to fan a flame for God's global glory in every local church. And I'm convinced he's right, that we see in the New Testament the role of the local church as the agent through which the Great Commission is carried out and ultimately accomplished. When we see in Acts chapter 13, the church at Antioch worshiping and fasting and praying, and the Spirit says to that body, set apart for me Saul and Barnabas for the work to which I've called them. They pray over them and they send them out, and a missionary movement is born that carries throughout the Roman Empire all the way through Acts chapter 28. And it started with a local church worshiping and fasting and praying, and the Spirit setting apart Paul and Barnabas in this way. And so when I think about local churches, I pray for Antioch-like movements to spring from churches of all sizes and churches in all kinds of different places. And so as a pastor or a church leader, I want to encourage you to think through practical, biblical ways that you can fuel that kind of movement. And I say fuel that kind of movement because obviously only God can create that kind of movement in His church. But G. Campbell Morgan said, we can't organize revival, but we can set our sails to catch the wind from heaven when God chooses to blow upon His people once again. And so I want to encourage you as a pastor or church leader to think through, okay, how can you set the sails and then worship and fast and pray for God to bring that kind of movement? To do Matthew 9, 37 and 38, ask the Lord of the harvest. This harvest is plentiful, workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into His harvest field. So to see 6,000 plus unreached people groups, a couple of billion people in the world who have little to no access to the gospel. And so to help people in your church to see that, to have their eyes open to that reality, for you in your own life to have your eyes open to that reality. We're talking about people who are unreached, not just lost. So there's a difference between lost and unreached. Sometimes people say, well, there's unreached people right around me in my office. I hear Christians and churches say, I have unreached people in my neighborhood. The reality is those people in their offices or their neighborhood are not unreached. You say, how do you know? This is because they're in your office, in your neighborhood. They have access to the gospel. You're there. You have the gospel. You work with them. You live next to them. They have access to the gospel. We're talking about people in the world, a couple billion of them who don't have access. So most of them, if you were in one of their shoes, you'd likely be born, you live, and you die without ever even hearing the good news of God's love in Christ. And so this must change. So to help people see that in the world, that reality in the world, and then open their eyes in the Word to see God's passion for His glory among all peoples. This is not intended to be a mission sermon once a year. This is the heartbeat behind all of Scripture. From cover to cover, God is passionate about His glory from the very first chapter, creating men and women in His image, and Him saying, be fruitful, fill the earth and multiply, fill the earth with my image, fill the earth with my glory. All of history headed toward the day when every tribe and tongue and people will gather around the throne and sing the praises of God for saving them. So Those are the bookends of the Bible, and in between is a story of how God sends His Son to bring salvation to all the peoples of the world.
Stephen, it's been a privilege to get to know you, doing some things together around refugees, which I'm surprised to learn is a surprisingly controversial subject. Christians, well, tell us a little bit about the history of World Relief, and it does more than engage with refugees, but tell us about the engagement with refugees.
World Relief started a long time ago, 1944, in serving the world, and its mission is really to serve local churches so they can serve the most vulnerable. Mm-hmm. 35 years ago, we started a program to serve refugees coming into the United States, which has been not a controversial program, ministry, for years and years until just this past year.
Yeah, decades you've been doing this. And you're wild-eyed, progressive liberals who don't love the Bible and you just care about this in settling refugees, right? I mean, what's your theological background?
Absolutely not. I mean, we do this out of a very specific biblical mandate to serve the stranger, to welcome the stranger, to serve the wanderer, the least of these. Mm-hmm. And the people that we work with, churches across the nations, are called to do that as well. Mm-hmm. So theology is very important for us in what we're doing.
Are you mainline Protestant or Catholic or evangelical? What are you?
I'm Anglican, evangelical Anglican myself, and we serve across the whole spectrum of evangelicals.
What about World Relief? What's it connected to?
Connected to the National Association of Evangelicals. It's underneath that umbrella. So we serve broadly across the whole evangelical spectrum.
Okay, so you're an evangelical organization doing ministry to serve refugees. Why would that be controversial?
Well, it wasn't controversial until two things happened. First of all, it was extraordinarily popular recently with the image of Island, this little boy.
Right. My church was, church all over America adopting refugees.
Churches across America coming out, and we've always served churches for years and years, 35 years, thousands of churches, thousands of refugees. Yeah. Now, when the image was put on CNN with this little boy on the shores of Turkey, more churches came and said, what can we do? Right. We cannot tolerate a world that's little boys that look like our kids on the on the beach. Yeah. Now, a few months later, there were images of terrorists in Paris, in San Bernardino. And so the juxtaposition of those two images has caused a controversy. Are the refugees that are coming associated with terrorists? And the facts prove that not to be true. The refugee program is the most stringent way to come into the United States.
It would
be the vetting process.
If you're a bad guy, the refugee process is a dumb way to try to get in. Because there's a whole lot of easier ways to get in. Okay, let me push with some questions, okay? But, Stephen, look at Germany. I mean, look at the recent arrests in Germany. I mean, is this going to be happening in the streets of American cities?
Well, very different situation in Europe. They've just come, right? And Merkel and others, the leaders in Europe, are having to deal with people already inside their country. That's a very different situation. We have the benefit of the ocean between us, right? And so we can select over 18, 24 months, sometimes 36 months, we can select which refugees come. And we should remember only far less than 1% of the refugees in the world, there are 20 million, ever come to the United States.
Okay, but there's millions coming to the United States through the refugee program, right? That's what I hear.
Absolutely not.
There's
only 70,000 last year in the whole country.
Only 70,000 refugees?
Only 70,000. Now, the reason why I say only, because back in the Reagan years, we were welcoming over 200,000. Mm-hmm. So we're way down from the
But those were 200,000 who were not from countries with places that want to kill us.
They were from countries all over the world. We've resettled refugees from 80 different countries.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. But now the issue has become resettling, particularly from Muslim-majority countries. Because, I mean, listen, if we let them in, they can do us harm. Because, I mean, there have been refugees that have done harm in the United States, right?
There have not been refugees that have done harm in the United States. There's been a few that have been suspect, and they've been immediately deported.
Okay, so San Bernardino, they were refugees, right?
They were not refugees.
I know. I'm being a little bit.
We like
but
it.
That's what we hear. It's all over the blog.
Right.
I read San Bernardino people were refugees. So, just for the record, there has been no refugee engaged in terrorism in the United States. Some have tried to go back to another country to join up, but there's been none. But the idea here, so they're coming over here, Stephen. It's civilization jihad, right? The idea here is we're going to resettle people. So aren't you, as an evangelical Christian, naively participating in ultimately the displacement of our people and the change in our way of life?
Let's take Syria and Iraq. Okay. Those are the two countries that are focused right now, especially Syria.
Right.
Now, Syria, less than 2,000 have come to the United States. So we can talk about Iraq because there's more people. Of the Iraqis that have come to the United States, 35% of them have been Christians, persecuted Christians. So when we have welcomed those refugees into our nation, we are actually serving our brothers and sisters.
Okay, so let's do, Jeb Bush suggested, let's just prioritize the Christians. Why then should we bring the Muslims in as well? Why not just go with the Christians?
We advocate that we serve people regardless of their religious status, right? We've always been a nation that way. And I think if you take a proper reading of the Bible, you say Jesus saying, welcome the least of these. Serve them. If they're persecuted Christians, welcome them as brothers and sisters. If they're not, be a Jesus presence to them. We bring refugees into communities, church communities, who develop relationships with people over years and years and years. And we see people who follow Allah that come to know Jesus because of the presence, the non-coercive presence of people in those local churches.
Okay.
Phenomenal.
Okay. But again, if they're bringing people over here and the long-term plan is the disruption and ultimately remaking of our way of life, aren't you participating in, again, what's been called civilization jihad that remaps us? Why would you do such a thing?
Well, actually, we see the opposite taking place in communities. So we see these communities all around the world, not just the Syria and Iraq. We see people coming in, many of them starting their own, choosing to follow Jesus, and many of them starting local immigrant churches that then are a blessing to our own country, to our own nation, to our own communities.
Okay, but I've walked the streets of London, and I've walked in some streets of London where every person around was primarily Arab Muslims, and I hear there are no-go zones in places there where the Sharia law is that people are afraid. According to our research that you help sponsor, pastors say their churches are more like twice as likely to fear refugees than to help refugees. So if that's the case, is there a warranted fear here?
Well, I don't think there is. I understand.
Well, listen, I don't think there is. I heard the FBI director says he cannot guarantee that there'll be no terrorists.
And I can't guarantee either, but I can demonstrate history precedent that there's never been a case of terrorism out of the refugee program, number one. Number two, I can talk about the vetting process, which is the best we have. Right? And number three, I can talk about the biblical mandate, the moral imperative to serve those who are the least of these. Now, the same surveys you put out, which are fantastic, show a 86% or more interest or desire or commitment to welcoming the stranger. So we have this tension of fear versus moral responsibility, and they don't have to be mutually exclusive. We don't have to pit them against one another. We can use very good wisdom in how we bring refugees, who comes. But at the same time, we don't have to give up on a moral imperative that we believe, that I think we all believe, is from Jesus himself.
So pitting one against the other, that's nice talk, but this is an election year. That's what we do, is we pit things one against the other. So does this calm down after the election year is over?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think you've actually seen some of it calm down already.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. In an election year, you see far fewer governors now talking about stopping the refugee resettlement program. And a lot of that is because they've looked at the data and the facts. So I think you've already seen it calm down with the election coming through. I think it's going to be an issue through November, but I do think it calms down. I really do. And I think as we meet the people, as we understand what's happening, as we talk to business leaders who are employing refugees and they can't find other people to take those jobs, there's an economic argument as well, a very clear one. As we walk through that data, take a deep breath from our fear and take a step back, meet refugees, talk about the facts, I think the fear starts to dissipate. We're seeing it. We're seeing it across the country.
Well, Stephen, okay, all that aside, the financial incentive. I read a story from a news outlet that you guys are basically rolling in the dough. All these relief agencies, you, with the evangelicals, Catholic Charities, and other things, you've all kind of signed a pact with the government. All this money's coming in. You're making people pay back money. The refugees have to pay you. Like, it's like they come here and they owe you money. And then at the same time, you've got all these contracts. So are you making a whole lot of money here in this?
No, we're nonprofit. But let's talk about the numbers. Let's break it down.
All right.
So per refugee family, $2,025. Sorry, per refugee is $2,025. Right. Now, that's for apartment rent, for deposit first 3 months. That's for setting up an apartment with furniture, is personal effects. So that money goes really quickly. So the $2,000 is exhausted in no time.
So you don't get that. That goes to them?
That comes to us,
comes
and we
you.
Use that for each individual refugee.
And you take a cut of that.
Well, we take a small administrative fee, 15%.
So you're making the money there. Wait, 15% of $2,000, okay, that's not a lot of money.
It's not a lot of money. It's 15%, which is below the average administrative charges in the industry, trust me.
Okay.
So there's $2,000. Now that's government money. We have to raise other money from churches and donors to complement that because it costs more than $2,000 per refugee to resettle into the United States. Okay? Now, bear in mind, over a couple years, the data shows that refugees are a net investment. So this isn't charity over years and years. Actually, they stimulate the economy.
But you're telling me nice things. I don't want to talk about nice things. I want to talk about the money you're making, because that's right. One of the wraps I've read about.
So $2,000, 15% on that comes to us, administrative fee.
$300 per refugee.
Now, there's a travel loan.
Okay.
You refer to these loans.
Yeah, yeah.
What is that? That loan comes from the government to us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for us to facilitate and give to the refugees to pay for their flights.
Okay, so you fly them in.
Right.
Okay, and they give you the money back.
They have to pay the money back over time, and then we in turn give that money back to the government except for an administrative fee.
Okay, so you're making another slice of money there.
Right, that goes to our cost to service that loan. Now, first of all, there's no interest on that loan. The refugee doesn't pay the administrative fee. The government does to us. So if a refugee gets a dollar, let's say $500 if you're from Cuba, or $1,300 if you're from Afghanistan.
Yeah.
They pay back $1,300 over months.
Right.
So it's a real benefit to them, but it demonstrates to them an ethic of paying back and responsibility, that dad that wants to say, hey, I helped us move here, right? We get a fee that comes from the government, right? And we use that to cover our costs, and if our costs don't absorb that full amount, we put that back into the program to serve refugees. Now, when you take the $2,000 and the travel loans and you multiply that across 27 offices, mm-hmm. across thousands of refugees, the numbers are big. They're into the millions.
Yes, yeah. And that's what I hear. You're making millions.
When I look at those numbers on our 990, for example, in 2014, I see big numbers.
990 is a tax form that charities have to file.
And it's public information.
Yeah. All of this. Anyone can Google this right now.
So if you look at that number and you say, wow, that's a big number, but if you divide that by the number of refugees we resettled that year, you come way down to about $3,300 per refugee.
Wow.
And that's, you know, the government money plus money that we've had
that
to raise
well.
And bring into that.
So the government doesn't send enough to cover the program. You're still raising money.
And they're intentional
and
about that because they want to work with organizations like us mm-hmm. that work with local communities, and in our case, churches and donors that want to help and fund.
Mm-hmm. And I met your staff. I didn't notice their Lexuses or their BMWs. So are you overcompensating your staff, making all this money?
I mean, you can visit our offices and you'd be surprised.
I have seen.
Right. And, you know, even our executive team, we're below the average numbers or salaries across the nonprofit.
I looked because after I read the news story, I looked. And for the size of your organization, you are substantially below the compensation.
We are.
For the typical ministry of that size.
Yeah, we're nonprofit. We're driven by mission. We're driven by local church. We got my colleagues, myself, we give back money to World Belief. We actually sometimes turn down salary increases because we're really all about what Jesus calls us to do, which is welcome the stranger.
As a church leader, wouldn't it be great to provide trustworthy devotional content to your church family to keep them in God's Word? By offering DevoHub, anyone who enters your church campus within a custom radius can access daily devotions through their mobile device. And when they come into your church, they're ready to activate. DevoHub gives you the ability to provide daily devotionals for your church in a brand new way. DevoHub. Sign up today at devohub.com.
Welcome back to The Exchange with Ed Stetzer. Our featured guest today is the president of World Relief, Stephen Bauman. We have more of their discussion in just a minute after we hear from Dr. Ann Bradley, who's the vice president of economic initiatives at the Institute for Faith, Work, and Economics.
Each day, we wake up with the knowledge that we have a job to do, and every minute counts. Time is a limited resource for everyone, rich or poor, male or female, young or old. The reality of limited time drives the choices we make. And it drives us to trade with one another. Is it more convenient to make something, buy something, or skip it altogether? Time, ability, and our resources are major factors in that decision. But so is personal preference. We trade with one another based on what we prefer to do. Do we value a homegrown garden over the convenience of purchasing the fruit of someone else's labor? These are the decisions that drive the trades we make. The reason this works so well is because it's God's design. He created us to apply our gifts and skills and talents to His creation. And when we do this well, we glorify Him and serve each other. Trade helps us come together to do this better than we ever could on our own. But when people do not have the freedom to live out these principles, there is more poverty. When all your energy goes into the basic tasks of surviving each day, then you have no time to do what you prefer. You can't fully thrive. In many nations of Africa, for example, the women and girls there spend all day getting water and preparing food. These women don't have a choice about how to spend their time, but if they lived in a more flourishing society, they would be able to make more fulfilling choices. The freer the society is, the more new ideas can be developed and new products and services are brought into the market. Not only does that stimulate human flourishing, it also saves lives. I know this from personal experience. My daughter and I survived a very traumatic pregnancy. When I went into early labor and was rushed to the hospital, we didn't know what was going to happen. There was nothing I could do. I had to rely on countless people that I did not know and trust them to care for me. What kind of society makes this even possible? A free society where people are able to use their gifts to serve others. In another place and another time, we may have been dead, but that's not our story, because free markets save lives. That option should be available to all mothers, but it's not. The old motto, be all you can be, is the essence of human flourishing. If we want our fellow humans to flourish, we need to ensure their freedom so that they can live into exactly who God has created them to be and live more fulfilled lives within the limited context of time. We all have work to do, and every minute counts. That's why economics matters.
All right, Stephen, I wanted to ask hard questions, but I want to pivot now because we've actually been partnering on some stuff, right? So we know that. We did the GC2 Summit together, which both simultaneously got us a lot of mail. I don't know if you got a lot of mail. But also, too, I think rallied a lot of Christians to an important issue. So, and again, we were talking off camera. You know, my church has been involved in this. I'm talking about my neighbors often. All right, so let's assume that there are spheres of responsibility in God's ordained universe, right? Mm-hmm. Government has a sphere of responsibility, Romans 13, and security is part of that. We affirm that's the government role. We want to have a robust vetting process, a wise approach to screening. Neither of us are advocating for willy-nilly open borders. Everybody comes who wants to come. Okay, so government does its job. So how do the people of God do their job to engage and welcome refugees? Knowing the government does its job, what do we do and how do we get involved?
Yeah, Mike Gerson, some of us know him, great commentator. He said, if the church is not relevant now in this crisis, which is the greatest humanitarian crisis of our day, yeah. really is. Yeah. If the church is not relevant now, we're not relevant. Yeah. And we lose something forevermore. And, you know, I think about a mom and her daughter who are, whether they're Muslim or not, and I can make a case for both. Some of them are Muslim. Some of them are Christian Iraqis. Yeah. They're afraid to send their little kids to school.
Yeah.
Now, when a church leader or a church member comes over and says, hey, I just want to come over and volunteer to walk your child to school with you today, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's Jesus' presence, and they didn't say a word. Now, they may say a word over the time as yeah. they build relationships. So the church can do so many things on this issue that don't require us to get on a plane,
yeah.
that don't cost us a whole lot of money, if anything at all.
Yeah.
Simple things like show up at the airport when a family comes from Iraq, whether they're Christian, persecuted Christians, yeah. or whether they're Muslims, or whether they're Syrians that have been through all sorts of trauma, have kids that have known only war, still holding their house keys. They don't want to come here. They want to go home. The average life of a conflict is 10 years. So are they going to wait 10 years to go home? The average stay in a refugee camp is 17 years.
Wow.
So they come reluctantly but grateful.
Mm-hmm.
And when there's a church at the airport, when I say church, I mean a small group.
Yeah.
Somebody that's just kind of, quote, adopted. That yeah. doesn't mean a lot of time. It just means come to the airport, yeah. maybe have a meal. It's revolutionary
yeah,
to those people.
You know, Nashville has the largest population of Kurds outside of what historic Kurdistan would be, which is a complicated geopolitical reality. And as I come into the airport sometimes, I'll see people welcoming, more so a few years ago, because it was more of a, you know, early on, welcoming Kurdish refugees. And it's a beautiful thing. I saw one family weep when they were welcomed. And I don't know who was the welcoming. I wanted to jump in, but it was obviously a moving moment here. So Christians can be a part in small ways, because when you hear adopting, You know, our church was engaged in a Syrian refugee resettlement, but we weren't the adopter. So what is it? What are the levels of involvement?
Most of it's actually very basic. Yeah. Be a good neighbor team, we call it, which is just maybe a small group, maybe some members of your church. Just come around this family to do things like, hey, could you provide some household goods, whether you buy them or bring them, help us set up an apartment, set up beds, be at the airport. Have them over for a meal with some of your friends from the church. That's the role of a good neighbor team. Yeah. We actually step back from adopting or using the language of even sponsoring, because these people are just like you and I. They're dads that they want to be empowered.
Right.
They quickly want to find a job that helps them to earn money to actually pay back the cost to fly to our country, which is phenomenal. We think, well, why would you make them pay for their flight? Well, actually, that's the ethic of America.
Yeah.
And that's what we would want as a father. Hey, I help get us here as a family. I'm earning money now. I'm going to send my little girl to school, pay for her clothing, whatever it is. So we use less language of adopting and sponsoring, more about just be a team, come alongside, learn from them, bless them, encourage them. And it's not rocket science.
Yeah, but I think there's a little bit of perception. Maybe they watched The Good Lie, you know, which is a movie that sort of a lot of people saw. There's a little bit of perception that they have to basically have a church social agency. It's not a bad thing. I mean, it's great to have that. But it's not. You can do that. You can have that level. And some people have ministries, wonderful ministries, that are refugee resettlement ministries. But every church can be involved in some way if they'd like to be.
Absolutely. Every church can be involved in some way. The greatest desire of a foreigner that comes to the United States, now these are refugees and immigrants, the greatest desire is to have a meal in an American home.
Yeah.
97% never do.
No, really? Wow.
97%. Wow. Now, that statistic may have moved down to 95.
But still overwhelmingly high.
Over 90% never do. Yeah. So one of the best things we can do is just have a meal. Have them over. Come, go to their home. Listen to their story. So it doesn't have to be a revolutionary type of work, but it can be very highly relational. Right. And it can actually change. It actually changes our lives as
well. Yeah, so, and that's one of the things we have with our church, is that as we got involved and engaged right around Christmas time, so we sort of, we you know, they were not a Christian family, so the question was, how do we do it? And we were told, just go ahead and make it a Christmas celebration. That'd be great. And so we did, and it was beautiful, and it was moving for our church, and we were blessed by it. Okay, so what are some places right now that churches, Christian leaders who are watching, listening, how can they get involved? They go to your website, but where? What are some things they can do?
Absolutely. Go to our website. We are in 27 cities throughout the country. And we also partner with other agencies. If we can't service you in your city, those folks in their cities, we can talk about other cities as well. So Seattle and Miami and places like Boise, Idaho, right here in the greater D.C. area up in Maryland, we have an office. So there's a lot of opportunities. Go to our website. There's another website called We Welcome Refugees that we help promote and sponsor, which is a broader platform for others doing stuff and work with refugees as well.
For resources, books, and Bible studies mentioned in the show, visit edstetzer.com. And while you're there, check out past episodes or read the latest study and analysis from Lifeway Research. Thanks for joining us on The Exchange, and we hope you'll be back with us again next week.
Thanks for joining Ed Stetzer and his team for this week's radio edition of The Exchange. Hear this and other past broadcasts of The Exchange, read up on the latest trends from Lifeway Research, and insights and articles from Ed and his team by visiting edstetzer.com. The Exchange is presented by Lifeway Christian Resources in cooperation with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media. Thanks for listening to the Exchange Radio Podcast. Programming like this is made available through your support. Find out more at myfaithradio.com.